the leaves from the magnolia trees in the meadow. Cane harvest is surely come.
A dry summer didn't come before.
All right. Thank you for joining us on the Organic Farm Stand. I think we can officially say that CD player number two has a problem. Happened the other night. It's happening again today. My name is Richard Hill. The Organic Farm Stand comes to you the first and third Thursday of each month. And we are delighted to be here. We have a show that we hope will inspire you, inform you, and I think give you sort of inspiration that a life well spent is something that has incredible reverberations throughout the world, and especially a circumscribed community we might describe as the organic community. Today we're going to be spending some time talking about the life and work of Bill Dusing, who is in a very, very mortal battle that we all go through, but he's approaching the end of his life, and we hope that he will actually be able to join us a little bit today. We're not sure about that, but we will be speaking with Eileen Hochberg, who is one of his colleagues who took over the executive directorship of the Connecticut Northeast Organic Farming Association after Bill's long reign in that position. So in any case, my name is Richard Hill. Today we have with us Chris Ferriero, who's joining us as co-host. Thanks for being with us, Chris.
Thanks, Richard.
And we have, of course, Guy Beardsley from Old Solar Farm.
Old Solar Farm.
That's close. Yeah. That's close, right.
Guy's Eco Garden. Actually, you're right across the river from there.
Yeah, we are indeed across the river. Right.
Right. And so from the White Hills of Shelton. And we have Becky Wilbur, who's coming back. She was with us last show. She'll be joining us on a regular basis soon.
Hi, Richard.
Great to have you. And a special guest today from somebody who works on Guy's Farm, but is from Monroe, Connecticut. Tatiana Artinian is here.
Thank you for having me.
Great to have you with us. Tatiana is a recent graduate of the Monroe High School. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So, but you have taken up sort of an avocation of working at the farm. How did that come about? You're working at Guy's Eco Garden?
Yes. I started working at Guy's Eco Garden last July for a senior capstone project where we had to put in 20 hours of volunteer work at any place of business that we chose. I was originally interested in pursuing nutrition, but I decided to do my capstone on organic farming, and now this fall I'm studying sustainable agriculture in college.
Where are you going?
Green Mountain College in Pulteney, Vermont.
Yeah, and last show we spoke to a professor from Green Mountain College who had written this very interesting book about a small town in the Italian Alps that has fought the conventional farming apple industry to a standstill there. It's pretty interesting. But in any case, that was a man named, I'm going to forget his name, because I don't have it right in front of me. But in any case, that was, Guy mentioned that he had an associate who was going to be going to Green Mountain. So that you must be thrilled to be on the way to do that.
Yeah, I'm very excited. It's a great program, and the school is so focused on sustainability and different ways of farming to create a more sustainable environment. So it's going to be a really good experience.
Have you visited the college?
I have, yes. And the farm there, it's beautiful. It's really lovely. And they're certified organic, so I'm really excited to start.
Wow, you're really on your way to get your mind and your hands in the dirt, so to speak. That's fantastic. So I'll tell you what, we're going to try to adhere to our normal schedule, which is that our guests by phone will join us around quarter after. So let's check in with Guy and find out what is going on in the middle of this heat wave, if that's posing any challenges, and in any case, like, how's production going on the farm?
Well, actually, Richard, pretty well. We were very fortunate in that last Thursday we had 1.7 inches of rain, and that has really inundated everything, and we were able to catch most of it and keep it in the ground as opposed to runoff. It came in pretty fast, but we put our rows in so that it would stop the rain from washing off, and so we managed to keep it into the ground, and so the ground is still pretty moist. Now, what has happened with all this heat? The zucchini have blossomed forth. Like, we look at zucchini, it may be 6 inches today, overnight, and today it will probably be 10 inches. Can you imagine 4 inches in a 24-hour? You could walk down the line and come back and see where it's grown. I mean, it's that's however, I got to say that one of the reasons for that is the fact that we now are collaring our, that's a collaring, collaring our plants with decomposed organic matter, which is exactly the same materials that when it was alive was what we're trying to grow. But that has been decomposing, and it is now friable, beautiful material that is used as a side dressing for almost all our crops on that. We don't do it on lettuces, but tomatoes are great, and, you know, just all the other great plants. The peppers are going to be good, and I want to talk about peppers, too. Some people have come up to me recently saying that they can't get peppers to grow. Peppers are a solanaceous crop. In other words, potatoes and eggplant and tomatoes are all of the same sort of crop. If so, you would think that probably if you get the production going on any one of those, that it would be effective on all the others. But peppers are a little bit different in that peppers require much more heat to start the season with. And if you plant them in the cool conditions or even cold conditions, they will never come up to their potential if you plant them or transplant them in that way. So that is something that you have to worry about peppers. Also, peppers are super sensitive to calcium, which is sensitive to tomatoes also. But calcium is a very important aspect, as is phosphate. And between phosphate and calcium, and if you have your land so that it will grow tomatoes and eggplant, if you have enough calcium and phosphate to support peppers growing, that will be the answer to get them to grow. However, you got to know what your soil is. And so if you don't know what your soil is, you're really trying to blow in the wind as regarding what you're trying to grow. So we always repeat, get your soil tested. And it's so easy to do, and it doesn't cost but anything. Just all you got to do is get the soil test over to New Haven Agricultural Experiment Station, and with a note as to who you are and what you're trying to grow. And the soil needs to be sifted and dry, but no more than about a cup and a half. And you just tell them what you want to grow, and they'll come back and tell you what you need to have to get that growth. And am I making sense? Am I taking too much time?
No,
Richard?
You're not at all.
Okay.
Right.
Well, anyway, that's very important. There's a whole bunch of other things that are going on in the farm. The garlic is just about ready to pick up. I looked at my most mature plant that I could find in our acres of garlic, and it wasn't quite ready. To be ready, you need to have about three of the leaves. The bottom leaves need to be dead or dying. Mm-hmm. You need to have that when you pull the clove out of the ground, or the bulb out of the ground. The clove should be very clearly identified within the bulb, and where the stalk meets the bulb should be much closer to a right angle than a fairing. Because if it's not quite ready, that stalk will fare into it, fairing being the kind of gradually goes into the bulb. You have a good definition of the stalk and the bulb separate. They should be closer to a right angle, and the cloves should be very clearly identified in the bulb. And that's what. And if you had a question on whether it's ready or not, pull one, and then you go ahead and take it out.
Make your decision based on that.
Yeah. Now, it's an interesting thing. It's some lady came by and said that they had moved out from a house and sold the house, but they had planted the garlic in there. And so she tried to take the garlic out and replant it. But this was in the last 2 weeks. And I said, oh, my, that's simply not going to work. So anyway, she just didn't want to leave the garlic there, and so she's going to have some unmature garlic to work with. But if you ever have you can plant the garlic, but it has to be done in the early spring if you're going to pull it out of the ground that has started. Say if you planted it last November and you wanted to transplant it, you have to start real early March, or at the very latest early in April. I have done that this past year, and those garlic are going to be smaller than those that we planted in November. So much for garlic.
Wait, question on garlic, and I bet Chris has a question.
Yes,
too.
Yes, I do.
Why don't you go first, Chris?
Okay, and actually, it's not necessarily a question. I think you answered it, but I did. I noticed I had two dead leaves at the bottom of my plants. I dug one plant up, but it wasn't well-defined cloves. It was more almost a solid bulb.
Yeah, and you want that to be very clearly identified, the cloves in the bulb. And so you plant it a little bit early. However, you can use that.
Actually, I kind of did. I went in December.
He was meant to say you harvested it a little too early.
Oh, yeah. I just thought, because I thought it was the two leaves, the two dead leaves.
Three dead leaves, leaves dying, right? Yeah, that's
so.
That's
is there a point at which you leave it in too long?
Oh, yeah. If you leave it in too long, you'll find the stalk itself will start to die.
Okay.
When the stalk itself is starting to die, then you've probably left it in too long. And so what happens then? The cloves start to separate and start to try to grow again.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Right now, you don't want that. Not
right.
at all.
Okay.
So you want to keep the bulb intact with the cloves very definitely identified, but still part of the bulb.
Okay. And one other question, not quite a comment, is that I've never been able to grow bell peppers. Every time I've ever tried to grow them, wherever I lived, they didn't grow. But I always have success with hot peppers.
Okay. Now, hot peppers require a slightly different action, but since you're talking about the bells, you need to have a good source, good strong source of phosphate, as well as calcium. But the pH can be as low as 5.6 or 5.7,
mm-hmm.
but it can also be as high as about 6.9. So pH is not the problem. The problem is the calcium and the phosphate. Richard, are we good?
Yeah, we have Eileen standing by, but we should continue, finish our...
Well, you said you had a question on the...
Sorry, my mic was down.
My question actually, I think, was answered when... Chris asked, is there a chance you could leave it in too long?
Oh, yes.
And then so...
Well, the stalk is dying.
Yeah.
The stalk, not the leaves. The stalk is dying. Chances are it needs to come out.
It's rotting. The bulb
well,
might be
no,
rotting.
Well, no, not rotting. It's decomposing.
Okay.
The leaves, you see, each leaf actually provides a covering for the bulb. So that means the bulb in its growth has about 7 or 8 coverings. They're very thin, but they are coverings. And mm-hmm. so what you're doing, you're letting 2 or 3 of those coverings sort of disintegrate. And so you're living, you're digging a bulb with about 3 or 4, maybe 5 coverings on it. And so then you kind of, now Becky is going to add something.
Well, no, I just wanted to clarify, because I know that after years of working on the farm, that you'll go out and you'll kind of pull a couple of the garlic out of the ground, and at some point you say to us workers, okay, it's time to get the garlic. And pretty much at that point, we all focus on taking the garlic out of the ground, because you don't have very long. So it's like from the time that you pronounce that it's mature, typically it's a week to, like, I even shudder to think that it's 2 weeks, because I know you want to get it out of the ground quickly at that point.
It doesn't. The window is still about a week or so.
Okay.
But not much beyond that.
Well, and that's the thing, because I know that some people will say, oh, you know, it. Yes, I see it, but, you know, I think, or I guess I should speak to myself, it's like, oh, if I leave it a little bit longer, it'll get bigger, it'll be better. And unfortunately, that's not the way it is with garlic, that, you know, once it's mature, within a week, you want to get it out of the ground, because it's already hit its best point, and now it's just going to start that decomposing or splitting apart, like you said.
Yeah, that's well, exactly right. Becky does sing so well, don't you think, Richard? When she explains that. Right?
Yeah, that was good. That was a very...
Now, Tatiana had her exercise last year in pulling garlic, too.
Yes, we did. It was definitely an event, you know? A few hours pulling garlic, and we were sore for a few days after that.
But actually, you know what? We ended up, because there were groups of us, Tatiana and I both raced 2 of the other workers while we were doing it. So we got that stuff out fast.
It went out pretty fast. Yeah. We were pretty quick with it by
we
the
were
end
good.
Of it.
So it sounds like rather than digging it up, you're actually just pulling it by the base?
You know, it depends.
Okay.
It's the field that it was planted in last year, the soil just...
It was soft,
and we did find that we were able to pull it out. In other soil, it's so compacted around the bulb that you absolutely have to dig it out, because if you try to pull out the stalk, what'll happen is you'll pull the stalk right out and you'll leave the bulb in the ground.
Yep.
And unfortunately, I think we've all gone through that where we've done that by accident.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not
even digging them up, I've lost the bulb.
Yeah.
Have to be very careful on digging them up to make sure that when you put the shovel in the ground, it does not put a slice on the garlic bulb. So you have to pull it off and go straight down, not off at an angle, straight down. And sometimes you hit a rock, that means you have to pull the shovel out and try another side of the garlic to get that out. But hopefully this year we got the garlic in 2 fields, one of which is softer soil than the other. So we'll see. Right.
Okay.
All right, folks.
Thank you, Guy.
Thank you all for that. And now let us bring in to the conversation Eileen Hochberg. Eileen, are you with us?
I'm here. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thanks for joining us. Eileen was the executive director of CT NOFA starting in 2013. And how many years did you serve in that role, Eileen?
I served in that role for 2 great years, 2013 to 2015.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. And we today wanted to focus on a bit on the life and work of Bill Dusing, your colleague, the person, I believe, he was the executive director just before you, or was there an interim person?
No, I followed immediately after Bill retired.
Okay.
Retired being a very loose word, of course,
right.
Because Bill always remained so active.
Yes, and right, and I think he became the sort of organic advocate after he left the official role of executive director for CT NOFA. if I'm not mistaken.
Right. Shortly after I joined is when Connecticut became the first state in the U.S. to pass the GMO labeling law, which Bill, of course, had worked on for so long, along with GMO-free Connecticut and others. And so, you know, that had happened. He had retired, but he did continue on as organic advocate, continuing to work on policy, still very active in the NOFA Interstate Council. He continued writing his monthly article for the CG NOFA's Gleanings e-newsletter, continued giving workshops, presenting at the conference, helping with grant writing, just indispensable to me and everyone else with his organic knowledge, his important connections with people in the movement all over the state. We became really great partners and great friends.
Well, you yourself are a lifelong organic foods advocate, and do you still live in right across the line in Somers, New York?
I live in Somers. I spend a lot of weekends in Connecticut. I'm in Connecticut right now, calling from southeastern Connecticut.
I wonder, you have, a unique perspective on what Bill did, both as executive director, but I think even for decades before that, as he developed his connection to the community, the organic community that I like to think of as his extended family. Maybe you could give us a little bit more about how his work sort of dovetailed into your participation, maybe inspired, I don't know if, you know, how you initially encountered Bill's efforts and stuff like that, but maybe you could just give us a little bit more about how you used the knowledge that he had to help you carry on.
Yeah, well, it's very interesting because, you know, you had mentioned that I've always been an organic advocate, and I certainly was by the time I graduated from college in 1971. Silent Spring had been written. Zen Microbiotic Cooking was a book I used all the time. Diet for Small Planet was coming out. I gardened in college. I lived on a farm at that point. I was vegetarian for a while. Today I'm an omnivore. But I was always, you know, back then we called it natural food, then organic. I moved to Long Island in 1979, had my own garden, quickly found the local organic farm. I relied heavily on organic gardening magazines. So this became my lifestyle. And then out there was somebody named Bill Dusing, who I did not know then. I really didn't hear the name Bill Dusing until probably 2010, 2011, during the late blight that we were having. A farmer friend of mine mentioned Bill Dusing had written about it. Then in 2012, I heard him speak at an event, a CT NOFA event in Ridgefield. And then really first got to know him in 2013 when I joined CT NOFA. The huge difference, I would say, is that although I was always an organic gardener, organic eater, had an organic lifestyle, and tried to impart that to people, Bill was the true pioneer type of a person, the true activist, the person whose entire life, both personally and professionally, was consumed by his mission to bring about an organic world. So much more active than I was. For part of my professional life, 11 years of it, I was also heavily involved in protecting land, bringing farmers and landowners together. I did some food systems consulting and then, you know, joined CT NOFA. But Bill has done this his entire life in that devoted, intense way. And I can't even imagine, I think it's just countless numbers of people who he has affected with his gentle nature, his intellect, his living the organic way, and all of his projects, his radio projects, his writing projects, certainly being a farmer, a teacher. People have said, you know, so many people have said how Bill Doozing has changed their lives in a direct way, and that's just the incredible thing about Bill. He is amazing. Up until this moment, being a teacher to all of us on a way to die with grace, facing it as a natural part of the life cycle, having regret, of course, not to live longer, but having a peace with it as well.
Yes, well spoken. Anybody have a thought?
I wanted to ask Irene. Irene, you've somewhere along
Eileen.
The
line. Eileen.
Eileen.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I'm sorry about that.
It's okay.
But have you read Bill's Living on the Earth? You probably have.
I've read some of the essays. I've listened to some of his Politics with Food. I've read so many of Bill's articles and, you know, heard so much of what he has to say. But because of the term living on the earth, friends have come together and have decided that, you know, while Bill is still with us, we want him to know how much love and respect we have for him, and approach the board of Seeking Alpha proposing to have a Bill Doozing Organic Living on the Earth Award given every year at Seeking Alpha's Winter Conference. One of the things that Bill said when he realized that he would be leaving us, you know, pretty soon, was that he trusts his colleagues in this mission will continue their efforts to realize a sustainable and joyful future for all. And the response to him saying that on Facebook was just absolutely amazing. Everybody said, you know, this is what we will do. The thing about it, of course, is that it is going to take all of us to realize a sustainable and joyful future. So many things have gotten better, but so many things are getting worse and fast. We can carry the torch on right now. We can fulfill his legacy, carry it on, but it's vitally important to keep passing the torch. And the progression towards a solar-powered society grounded in organic agriculture, which Bill has devoted his life to, that progression is going to take a long, long time. And we have to ensure there will be activists to carry on the work, not just once Bill leaves this earth, but after all of us, who will help carry the torch after we leave the earth. And that's the vein in which we want to give this award. It will be given to a deserving farmer, organic landscaper, advocate, or organization devoted to Bill's goals of loving and treating the earth in a natural way. It really takes a village. It takes a world.
Have you come up with a concept as to how that award would be given?
Well, I think that every year staff and volunteers involved with Seeking Alpha will decide who is most deserving of the award, who is doing important work to make sure that we one day can have a solar-powered society grounded in organic agriculture. And it will be given at the Winter Conference. Now, to support this work, a Friends of Bill Doozing Fund has been created, and there is a page on the Seeking Alpha website where people can support the work of Seeking Alpha and the ability to give awards like this and recognize people for doing important work, so that if folks are inspired, they can consider going to the Seeking Alpha homepage, clicking on Bill's photo, and making a donation to the Friends of Bill Doozing Fund, all to carry on the great work of Bill Doozing. And, of course, if people prefer to mail their donation, they can do that to Seeking Alpha, 126 Derby Avenue, Derby, Connecticut, 06418. You know, Bill worked so hard for the organization since 1982, as he did with everything that he created. At the same time, he started the work towards creating Common Ground High School. He was writing and doing radio shows. Bill has never stopped. And so this is just a great way to honor him and fulfill his wish that we carry on his work.
That's absolutely outstanding, Eileen. And so we need to have a – I'm not sure if it's on your Facebook or whatever it is, the criteria for earning that award or for getting that award. But I would think that you've already explained it. Have you put it out in writing yet?
So there is a page. It doesn't go yet into the specific criteria that the board and staff will use, but does talk about the fact that it will be, people who are doing important work, a deserving farmer, an organic landscaper, an organic advocate, or an organization who is following in Bill's footsteps and carrying out Bill's work. We, as friends of Bill Duesing, we thought it really important for him to know about this effort and see it while he's still with us. So it makes us really happy that it has taken hold already, so he knows it's happening. But the criteria and the real specifics of it can come later. We wanted him to know, yes, Bill, your work is going to be carried on. It is such important work. It has inspired so many, 5 decades of work. And this work, like I said before, it's going to continue on for decades into the future. You know, I'm sure we all wish that we could say we've solved it. It's all done. You know, we don't have industrialized agriculture informing organic standards. We don't have climate change creating this heat dome over the world as we speak right now and all these things. But we all know we have a lot more to do, a lot. And none of us can live forever, and we won't. And so we have to keep passing the torch and, you know, giving an award and recognizing people for the work that they're doing and hope that for decades to come there will be people deserving of this award, because that means that this work will be carrying on and, you know, problems will be solved.
Okay, that's great. Jeff Kordelak bought into this picture? I'm sure he has.
Yes. Obviously after I stepped down in 2015, Jeff became, the executive director. He's doing an incredible job. Now he's been executive director for 3 years and, you know, like I said, doing great things. We approached him and he, you know, brought this idea to the board. He and his staff developed the page and are, you know, totally behind it. But there are so many exciting things happening at CTNO for right now. For example, they have a grant right now from the Long Island Sound Future Fund to be able to give full scholarships for Connecticut land care professionals to take a course, the organic land care accreditation course. In August, it'll be in New Haven, and in November, it will be in Hartford, and they have this funding from the Long Island Sound Future Fund to be able to send landscapers free of charge, which is phenomenal because it's not an inexpensive course to run. And so I'm sure that that holds back a lot of people who would otherwise want to take it. And in addition, there is now a 3-year USDA specialty crop block grant, which will be centered on pollinators and soil health initiatives. And CTNOFA, because of this grant, will be able to help with seed and tool rental money for those who want to try no-till agriculture or enhance pollinator habitat. And these initiatives are so important. And, Jeff has been able to, carry this work forward, get these grants, and he's doing a terrific job.
I just want to mention that Bill Duesing has joined us. And we are so delighted that he could listen and actually participate in this conversation today. Bill, welcome, and we miss you already. You know, you should have been here last week. we got you here this week. That's fantastic. Thank you for joining us.
I just want to say okay. Well, thank you. It's wonderful to be here, to be invited to be on again, and I miss you all you folks, but... as they said, we're keeping on, carrying on. It's so wonderful that Guy's got a high school student there moving into college. And one of the things that's so exciting, you know, when I was in college, I don't know if there was any organic agriculture school in anywhere. And now so many people are involved, and starting with places like Yale, which just gets kids interested and excited in what the importance of organic agriculture and the way it can, you know, the holistic nature of it and what it brings to how important it is for our future to grow our food organically and to connect with the climate in a good way.
Bill, could you say a little bit more about, Eileen mentioned Common Ground High School. Could you talk a little bit about that project in the light of this bringing up the topic of education of young people on this stuff, what was that project about, and how does it further the organic movement?
In 1982, I started to work with a high school. I was still connected with UConn. I had done some work with UConn about energy at that point. Because we had a new president named Mr. Reagan, who didn't think we needed to care about solar energy or renewable energy or energy conservation or any of that thing. My job, which had been promoting that effort in Connecticut, was eliminated, but UConn wanted to help me find some work. So they connected. We connected. I said I wanted to work with high school students, teaching them about where their food and energy comes from. And we connected with the high school in the community in New Haven and a small grant to develop a curriculum, which we did with using the teachers at the school and the teachers from UConn. And among we did courses in food and energy and, of course, in the politics of food. And one of the most exciting ones was this ecology course we did, which met for 8 weeks in the spring at the West Rock Nature Center in New Haven. And it was so the kids studied English, studied ecology, raised animals, raised vegetables, cooked food. And it was just such an incredible model for education that got the kids very excited, help them educate younger kids. We could see that their excitement as the kindergarten and first graders came through, learning about where the food came from, what the vegetables were, how the animals were raised. And it took us about, I don't know, 7 years after that started before we started a nonprofit called the New Haven Ecology Project with a specific goal of starting a school based on this model. And then it took us another almost 10 years till 1997 when we were the first charter environmental high school in Connecticut. And and it's been grown just so phenomenally since then. It's a wonderful place over on Springside Avenue in New Haven, right next to West Rock Ridge State Park, where they have a large garden. They grow a lot of the food for the kids to eat. They grow food for the neighborhood, which is somewhat economically challenged in that area. They also do a whole lot of summer programs. I keep running into people who are taking their younger children there for the summer, for their summer camp, where they, again, learn about animals and food and connect with nature. And it's one of the really exciting things is the fact that it connects the the food growing, the agriculture, with nature and the wildness of West Rock Ridge. And that's one of the main problems with our agriculture as a whole in this country, is that it's separated. You know, you have this industrial agriculture, which is completely separated from nature and doesn't connect in a good way.
You know, I've heard over the years, in fact, at a recent NOFA conference, winter conference, students from Common Ground High School presented some workshops that with a strong focus on food justice and other social justice issues. I'm wondering if you could just talk a little bit about that component of the Common Ground curriculum.
I think one of the things that we need to remember is that organic is really holistic. You know, we need to think about the whole of our lives, the whole of nature, the whole of our relationships with each other. And so, especially in Common Ground, they're very active in social justice and environmental justice in their community, because they have students from many different towns around Connecticut, around New Haven, as well as just New Haven. And they are, very much involved in the leading issues in terms of justice in the area.
And Common Ground High School has actually become a nexus for a lot of community activity, a lot of workshops, symposia, bringing people together to talk about food, justice, and environmental issues. So it's not just the high school students that benefit from it, it's the entire town.
Nutrition classes with using the different ethnic cuisines of the New Haven area. It's really wonderfully done. Maybe this is a time to point out that Richard has interviewed me for a couple of hours, 1 month or so ago, about this work as we move along. And I guess it's going to be available soon online. And for people who are interested in knowing a little more about the history, a little more detail on that, it's that would be a good source. And I'm sure Richard will let you know through the Organic Farm Stand and the Facebook page what is happening there.
Yeah, that interview, which Bill was so generous to grant, we conducted it on May 28th after Bill had posted to his, as I said, extended family on Facebook the challenges that he was facing, end-of-life challenges. And it occurred to me that 50 to 60 years of knowledge and activism was in the balance, and that we should try to save as much of that as we could. So Bill allowed me to come and talk to him, and we toured the farm and got a lot of fantastic stuff. So that is, we're putting it in shape, along with a bunch of photos that I took at Old Solar Farm. And we're going to make that into a package. Becky Wilbur's going to help us to coordinate the photos with the audio. And it'll be posted all over the place. We'll put it, hopefully, on CT NOFA and Pecan Facebook and Organic Farm Stand Facebook, etc. It'll be a podcast here on the PKN podcast list as well. An in-depth interview with Bill Dusing.
Yeah. I'm very honored by all this. Thank you so much. I think my wife Suzanne wanted to say something. She's coming here, and we'll get her on the phone and see if we can keep our small dog quiet enough. So, here...
Thanks, Bill.
You talking to the, you're welcome.
Thank you, Bill.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, Suze.
Hi. Hello.
Hi. I just, Eileen, when you were talking about giving one award for the thing you're working on, I was wondering, since you named those very discrete categories, whether you get a lot more exposure and somewhat more exponential if you give one in each of those categories. Just something to consider in the formative phases of this grant, of this award. Just something that, you know, as you were talking about it, you know, I thought, well, in 4 years, you know, maybe you'd cover all four categories. Whereas if you gave one to, you know, an organization and a farmer and a, you know, it might get more exposure. So that was one of the things that I thought of. I love the show. Thank you, Eileen, for all the wonderful history that you gave. And I'm gonna say goodbye and hand it back to Bill, if I may. So have a great day and good growing.
Thank you, Suzanne.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bill, you still there?
Bill's coming back.
Yeah.
So, go ahead, Becky.
The one thing that I wanted to say, because I know Bill was very involved with the Common Ground in the high school, his legacy actually goes even beyond that. I taught in New Haven, and our school had a small garden plot, and some of the students and teachers from Common Ground were coming to the elementary school to help the kids to grow and to learn about the plants so that even though they're living inner city, they can see what it's like to have container plants, plant beds, different things like that, which really, again, takes that whole idea of growing and teaching a new generation how to grow their own food, the importance of sustainability, the importance of organics, the importance of being good to the earth. So that, you know, while it started as a high school, it has truly grown so that there are so many people that are benefiting from, you know, just that one idea that was, you know, started.
Well, that's Tatiana's business. That's exactly what she's going to get involved in, right, Tatiana?
Yeah, that's it. Sustainable agriculture and food production. So just trying to figure out a more sustainable way to produce organic food on both small and large scales so that it's accessible to people and they don't feel like it's more expensive or all the preconceived ideas that people have about organic food, to kind of switch their viewpoint and allow organics to be more widespread.
You know, when you go up to that college, you might consider your master's as an undergraduate, because your thinking now is far ahead of most people's ideas on that. So, yeah, keep that in mind. You need to plug in a master's, and you can do it at the same time, almost.
Yeah, right? they do have a master's program in sustainable agriculture there, which is exciting.
Bill, I wanted to ask you, when you talk about the kids, the little kids, the first graders, the primary school kids, and then the high school kids who got involved in this, talk a little bit about your, I don't know if I want to call it a metaphysical, mystical, spiritual, or just highly enlightened relationship to soil and plants, and how that, sort of the roots of that. I think for you, and based on the interview I conducted, for you it happened, you know, when you were already an adult, a young adult, but it there was a connection that you made that I think somehow has, you know, just followed through your whole life as an activist and an educator. I wonder if you care to share that with us.
Well, I guess a lot of my interest and feelings in this way came from more ancient wisdom, a book I read about agriculture in Japan, Korea, and China 4,000 years ago. A book written by an agriculturalist from Britain who spent a bunch of time in India learning from the farmers there and realizing that the British people didn't really know agriculture, but the Indian farmers did. And then various other people picked up on that and talked about this holistic connection that the health of the soil, the land, the people, and the animals is absolutely interconnected. And more, just as science is looking at this, We're understanding the importance of our connection to the soil, of the organisms that are in the soil, of that they're organisms in the soil that if we have connection with them, they make us happy, as well as making us healthy and then maybe keeping us healthy from diseases. There's so much important connection there. And when, after working in New Haven, while we were doing this high school and community work, during the 1990s, Suzanne was teaching fifth grade in Bridgeport, and I worked every once a week with the fifth grade students there in their garden, and just seeing their joy at learning about the plants, learning about the soil, actually participating, working, using our bodies. It's what people do.
Getting your hands dirty.
Yes, yes. It's so important. And there's, so it's really a holistic nature of organic, which is, you know, the health of all the organisms that are involved, which is so critical. And so much that we've gotten away from as we get in these sterile environments with artificial lights and artificial surfaces and plastics and stuff. It's just not what, you know, our species evolved with. You know, we've had a couple of 100,000 years of with being with plants and animals. And
Bill, did you find that when you worked with these young students that they were more prone to eat vegetables if they raised them themselves?
Oh, for sure. They really loved them and raised them and prepared them. Yeah, we had some great meals. We had a salad party, you know, every week we could during the season. We made, you know, pumpkin muffins and French fries, and the kids would love to cook and love to eat it once they had grown it and harvested and cooked it. The excitement of digging up potatoes from the soil is just phenomenal.
I find myself wishing that more schools had classes or these activities available for their students. Because I think in the end, it does promote a healthier lifestyle. Not only the physical activity, because, you know, our generation today, they're calling them the indoor generation because everything they do is screen time and involved indoors versus being outside, playing, running, working the soil. And yet, when you allow the children to be outside, growing these things, they love the food. They're active, and it's just so much better for them.
I couldn't agree more. And the interesting thing is, not really a new idea. We had this book that someone gave us long ago, which is called "Establish the School Gardens," which was published in 1903 in Hartford, Connecticut, and had these, you know, beautiful diagrams and pictures of kids gardening at that time. And apparently in some areas, every school had a garden because they realized it was so important.
Everybody should remember that the Yukon used to be, when my father went there in class of 1912, Storrs Agricultural College. That was Yukon years and years ago.
Yeah.
Well, I want to just let everybody know that we are flat out of time. I want to thank Eileen Hochberg, former executive director of CT NOFA, for joining us today and sharing your heartfelt experiences with Bill Dusing. Bill, it is one more gift that you could join us today.
It was a real pleasure. Thank you, Richard.
Yeah, thanks, Bill, and thanks for contributing to the show for so many years.
Yeah, that's has to be said that we are going.
It's been a great pleasure.
Yeah, as I go down the list of shows that you've been around, produced really here for 3 years, it's incredible the resources that you brought to bear the connections, the personal ones, but just your imagination and your knowledge that have led us to have, I think, a cutting-edge show here for 3 to 4 years. And we hope that we've learned enough to be able to do it without you in the future, Bill.
I bet you have.
Thank you again, and we'll wish you peace and comfort.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Okay, Bill, do good work. Keep that garlic going.
Okay, yeah.
Thank you, Eileen and Bill. All right, and we are flat out of time. This is the Organic Farm Stand. My name is Richard Hill. Thank you, Chris Ferriero,
sure.
Guy Beardsley, Tatiana Artinio?
Yes,
Artinian. My pleasure. Such a pleasure to meet you. Becky Wilbur. We will be back in a couple of weeks with more organic stuff. Enjoy the rest of your day. Let's see. All mixed up with Bill,
Peter Beauchamp.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you. My mind is a little blown today. Thank you all for listening, and stay tuned for more programming on WPKN. 100% natural. Well, well, well. Organic love. Baby, it's 100% natural.
Programming support comes from New Morning Market, the independently owned organic market whose mission since 1971 has been to build a local, healthy, and sustainable food community. Offering local organic produce and humanely raised meats, sustainably harvested seafood, and prepared to order organic juices, smoothies, and meals to dine in or take out. Located at 129 Main Street North in Woodbury, Connecticut. More information at newmorn.com. Good food, good people, good life. New Morning Market. Support for WPKN comes from Grillo Services of Milford, Connecticut, supplying organic topsoil, organic compost, mulch, dumpsters, decorative gravel, and more to Connecticut's residential, commercial, and municipal